Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. So happy to have my guest today is former BYU linebacker, Brian Keel. Brian, it's always good to see you. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Well, let's catch up with you. This is one of the things, we got a lot to talk about, but I see you from time to time on different shows, and I hear you doing different interviews, but it's always fun to kind of give everybody an update on what life is like for you now, because for a lot of people, they remember you as a player, and that's kind of how they'll always remember you. So what is going on in the life of Brian Keel these days?
Lots of stuff, good things. I still miss football for sure, so that's there. I watch lots of games every weekend, and I see those guys out there, and I'm jealous. I wish I was still playing. But I live in Draper, married Jessica, my wife. We met at BYU, and we've been married for 15 years this year. And we got three kids, 11, 9, and 6. And they're in all the sports.
Boys, girls, so both?
It's girl, boy, girl.
Nice.
So they're good kids. They play all the sports, and we love it.
Okay, so I want to focus on what you were talking about. You said your kids play in all the sports. What's it like for you to be on this side of it with your kids, like your parents were with you and your family growing up?
Yeah, so we kind of had to make some cuts recently because they were in too many. But so initially, we didn't want to force anything. We just kind of we wanted to expose them to sports, but not, force them down a path. So let's go back to my son. We wanted him to be in all the sports and then kind of see what he liked, what he was good at, et cetera. And so started off with club soccer. He did that for several years. And then we did flag football. And then a couple years ago, when he was old enough, we swapped into tackle. And so he did that, and then we added in, first it was T-ball, and then it became kid pitch. So he's in that now, and then he just started comp basketball. And last year I put him in track, and his track coach is my teammate, Nate Solberg. About a year ago, he was in five different sports, and it was just too much, so we had to make some cuts. But the thing that warmed my heart is I asked him, I had him list his sports, and good old football was number one. And I did not steer that other than genetically. So, but it does warm my heart.
Okay. So you were talking about how much you miss football. When was the last time that you played competitive football? And we're not talking about the alumni game, and we know certainly the impact you had on that game sealing the deal, but when was the last time you played competitive football? How long has it been?
So I was running down the field, and my knee just buckled, and it ended up being a ruptured ACL. So weird. Nobody touched me. That was Sunday night football. Redskins, even though they're not called that anymore, versus the Cowboys. And that was October 13th, 2013. And so that's, what is that, more than 10 years now.
What do you miss most about it? And I kind of have an idea because I think to a certain degree, most athletes and former athletes all kind of answer this similar. I'm kind of curious how you look at this.
The thing that I miss the most is the competition.
Yeah.
Just the me versus you. Because every play boils down to that. Any position, pick a position on the field, and you're going to get somebody. Pretty much. And I love that. I loved it. I missed it. I loved doing it in practice. I loved one-on-ones. I loved seven-on-seven. I loved I just the tackling drills, and I miss it. I miss just competing,
yeah,
and winning.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the answers that I usually get. It's either I miss the competition, I miss that adrenaline that you get when you just compete, and the other answer that I get quite often is I miss just being around the guys. The camaraderie and being a part of a team, it's just not something that you can replicate, is it?
I miss that like crazy. And a lot of people will say that's the thing they miss the most. For me, I do miss that a lot. That brotherhood is just unlike anything. You can't replicate it. And there's certain institutions that have it. And a football team, it has it. And I do miss it. But above that, it's that competition.
All right. So we were talking about your kids and how they're growing up in sports and how your family is growing and how you guys are doing today. I want to take you back to when you were a kid. Tell me about your life growing up. When you look back on your childhood, did you have a good childhood?
Fantastic childhood. Yeah, just I was blessed, very blessed, very, very privileged. I'll jump into it. That's a very long story, but I'll do it very briefly. I was adopted. I went to the Keel family, and it was a closed adoption. This is 1984. The Keels were hopeful to have lots of kids, Gary and Nancy. They got married young. They had three kids, and then Nancy, my mother, she couldn't have kids anymore, so they started to adopt. They ended up adopting six. She wanted to have 12. They didn't quite get to 12, but they got to 9. And so I'm number 8 by age. I'm number 7 by where I showed up. But they got me as a baby. I was 2 days old. And the only thing that we knew about my biological parents was one of the caseworkers mentioned to them at the office that when they were picking me up, that my birth father was an NFL running back. So that kind of lived as folklore all growing up, that I was the son of an NFL running back. And it wasn't ever documented. We didn't know. We didn't have a name. We didn't have any of that stuff. I mean, some people thought my dad made it up. But lo and behold, fast forward, it was true. My birth father, his name's Maurice Turner. He was a Utah State running back and got drafted by the Vikings. And anyway, when it was all confirmed, my dad, Gary, he was like, yeah, see, I told you guys, that was a true story. So growing up, I had the greatest family, the greatest parents, just a great atmosphere. We loved sports. We had season tickets to BYU. I wanted to be a BYU football player. It was just a dream come true to actually get there.
This is a part of your life that I can relate to. Now, I am not adopted, but my sister is adopted, and so I've gone through this process sort of looking in with my sister and seeing how she has gone through her life and how it's affected her both positively and negatively and all the things that come with that. So this has always been something that I've been interested in. How did it shape your life? Was it always part of your identity, or was that not how your parents chose to raise you and your other siblings who were adopted?
Yeah, so I'm biracial and my parents are both white, so it wasn't a situation that they couldn't address it. Sooner or later, that cat was getting out of the bag. of the six kids that they adopted, four are biracial like me. But I think I look back and I couldn't give them more credit because they did a fantastic job of raising us and loving us and really treating everybody the same. And so it was something that was known, being adopted, but it wasn't like our identity. Our identity was their children. And if you didn't look at us, obviously we looked different, but aside from that, you couldn't tell which of their kids were natural or adopted because they treated us all the same. And so I give them a ton of credit for that. So because of that, my identity wasn't, you know, tied to that. I knew it, I recognized it, and I embraced it, but it wasn't, you know, who I saw myself as. I saw myself as one of their kids.
Do you think that it helped you growing up that you had other adopted siblings, that you were not the only one that was going through that?
For sure. I obviously, there's plenty of successful adoptions where there's just one kid that's adopted, for sure. But I definitely think it helps, just because it's like anything in life. When you go through something, there's strength in numbers. And so it does help, especially when it's when there's biracial issues as well, because it's just helps to have other people to lean on and support. And every teenager goes through the identity, who am I, to various levels. And so there's a lot more of that when you're biracial in a white community at a white school and you're adopted. And so I think it did help to have siblings to learn from and to have community with.
Beyond being able to confirm the story about your birth father being an NFL running back, did you always want to know about your birth parents? Was that always something that was an urge for you? And how did that play out as you got older?
Yeah, so everybody has a different experience and different needs and wants. And even within my family, that need or want of knowing where you came from, it varied depending on which adopted kid you were talking about. And so, you know, I have some siblings that really, really wanted that. And for me, it was something that I did want. I was interested in it. I thought it would be cool, but I didn't need it. I had fantastic parents. I had everything that I needed. So it wasn't something that was necessary for me, but it definitely was interesting. You're curious, you know, where did you come from? What do they look like? What were they interested in? And all those things. So I definitely wondered and always hoped that that would happen. But really, I never really knew if it would or not.
What was the reality of the situation when you were finally able to have communication?
That's another long story, but it really was a miracle. Just the way that it all happened and the way we found them and tracked them down. And to tell that long story short, it was ultimately an answered prayer. You know, my birth father, he's not a member of the church. He was Catholic, but he believes in prayer. He believes in that. And when my birth mother, she is a member of the church. And when she found out she was pregnant, she was devastated and, you know, went through all those emotions. And she thought that she just kind of assumed that they would get married. And that didn't work out. And that really broke her heart. And it was sad and it was tough. And ultimately, with counseling and prayer, and she made the decision to place her baby, me, for adoption. When she told him that, that broke his heart, because that's not what he was expecting or not what he wanted. And he wanted to be a part of his child's life. In those days, he didn't have a say. And it is just kind of interesting how it unfolded. But ultimately, he honored her wishes against his wish and allowed it to happen. And they haven't spoken since then. But they're both great people. And anyway, I tell all of that because when we were reconnected, it turns out that that connection, that reunion was something that he had been praying for every day. And so it was an answered prayer. And it has been a blessing in his life. And I'm grateful for that. It's been a blessing in all of our lives. And it's been a blessing in my birth mom's life. And it's been really cool.
What's your current relationship with your birth parents today?
It's great. It's really cool. I talk to them regularly. And he lives in Minnesota, so I don't see him as much. He's married. He has two other kids. And they're both football players. The older one played at Northern Iowa. Actually, kind of funny, because the year after I left BYU, he came to Provo and played the Cougars. And so I missed tackling my unknown brother by 1 year. And then the younger one played at North Dakota State. and he just finished his 10th year in the NFL. And then my birth mom, she's married. She has 5 kids. They live in Ogden. So I see them a lot more, and I have a great relationship. It's really cool. And I've loved now that I have kids, and I feel like it doesn't replace what they missed out on, but it gives them a little piece of that. And I know they really enjoy being a part of my kids' lives.
You've mentioned the fact that, you know, this was an answer to a prayer to your birth father, because he wanted to be able to have some sort of connection with you. I'm curious, when you look back now, and obviously, you know, today it's a strong part of your life. But when you look back and realize that you were placed in a family where religion was important and a belief in our Heavenly Father was important, how blessed do you feel that is the situation that you were able to grow up in?
Immensely blessed, and just really appreciated, and that's ultimately what she wanted when she made that decision. She felt like I deserved a framework of a two-parent household that was married and would raise their child in the gospel, and that she did the adoption through, at the time it was called LDS Social Services. Mm-hmm. And that was part of it, was that's where I would be placed. And I am eternally appreciative of that. And I understand, and I can have empathy for the tough decision that she made. And I also have empathy for my birth father. And I put myself in his shoes, and I get it. His son was taken from him against his will. And it's tragic. And my heart breaks for him when I think about what that would have been like.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more with Brian Keel. We'll get into his playing career at BYU and the pros. I'm telling you, if you've never had a chance to watch Brian Keel play football, you have missed out. And we're going to get into his career when we come back. We'll have more Deep Blue after this on BYU Radio. Welcome back to Deep Blue. My name is Jason Shepherd. Our guest today is former BYU Cougar Brian Keel. And before the break, we said we were going to get ready to talk about your playing career. And I had the privilege of being able to cover you as a player. So yes, I am dating myself in terms of how old I am. But you were one of those guys that 100% all the time, you never had to worry about Brian Keel's effort. Was that always in you growing up? Were you always the guy that was going to give 110 and you were going to go as fast as you could?
Yes and no. I definitely was on the high end of that effort category. But it's funny how you learn good habits. And it's so at BYU, that was certainly who I was, and in the NFL. And it's funny because I remember being at BYU and watching some tape of me in high school and being disgusted at the lack of effort. And at the time, I didn't even think about it. I didn't realize it. It wasn't something that my coaches really got after. And I remember like seeing some plays that went the other way. And then I was kind of like, I'm done on the play, and just kind of stood there and watched. And that at BYU would never do that. And from the whistle to whistle, there's one speed. And I remember being disgusted about it.
When did you start playing football? Was it super
when
young?
I was 8.
8 years old. So you've been you started playing football. And was it always football, or were you like your kids? Did you play everything and then ultimately zeroed in on football?
No, it was different. I think a lot of it went into that Keel family folklore of who my birth father was, but it was like the path was going to be football. And so I played baseball when I was 7. That was the first sport that I played. And then the next year when I was 8, I played football too. And I played basketball a little bit, but not a lot. And I did track once when I was a kid and didn't really like it. And I ended up doing it 1 year in high school, but football was always the one. And part of that is genetics. Like I just have a body that was made to be a linebacker. And so it just was, and then my interests, I love it. So it was a great marriage.
So was there any doubt in your mind that you would be playing college football, certainly? And then was the goal always the NFL, or was college the goal and anything above that was gravy?
No, the goal was the NFL. And I think a big part of that was that story. It's just when you grow up with this idea that that's where you came from, it's supernatural to just expect, well, I'm going to get there too. And there's, you know, bumps along the road. And I mean, I remember being younger teenager and was with some neighbor kids who were a couple years older than me. And we were talking about, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I remember matter-of-factly saying, well, I'm going to be an NFL player. And they both laughed at me. And I just remember being like, okay, well, I'll show you. And I did. And so, I mean, obviously I was blessed. I was fortunate to be healthy and, you know, thing there, you need a lot of work, help and a lot of work to get there. But the first piece is that mindset. And I did have that mindset.
Well, when you realized that you had what it takes to play at the next level and ultimately in the NFL, let's go back to high school. And it's time to pick where you were going to go to school. You grew up a BYU fan. So was it BYU and blinders for everything else? Was it always going to be BYU?
Pretty much. I think recruiting was different then. So I didn't get recruited a lot. I got so many letters from academic institutions. But football schools, I didn't get a ton of recruitment. But I think... So, I mean, at the time, Miami was really good. They were on that undefeated streak. And so, so I just throw that out there because they were really good. I think they could have come knocking, and I would have loved it and bragged about it and said, thanks, but I'm going to BYU. I don't think there's anyone that could have steered me away.
Did the University of Utah waste any time on trying to get you up on the hill?
Yeah, so that's a good story. I was at Brighton High School after my junior year. Me and the other outside linebacker were kind of the top two guys. And Kyle Whittingham, who was then the D coordinator, came by our school and we were in the weight room lifting. And he's kind of talking to us, mostly talking to the other guy, because he knew, they all knew. I'm just this dyed-in-the-wool BYU fan with season tickets. My brother played there and that's all I wanted to do was go there. So he's talking to us, mostly talking to my buddy. And then he kind of turns and looks to me and says, Keel, would you even come to Utah? And I looked at him and I said, sure, if BYU didn't offer me. and he says, no, it doesn't work like that. They get our rejects. And it's kind of funny. So he went out in the hallway and I was thinking, my wheels are turning my head. And I was like, that's not the strategy. I need them to want me. So I stick my head back out in the hallway and I said, you know, I would consider Utah's medical school, because at that time I kind of wanted to be a doctor. And so he was like, okay, well, I'm going to look at your grades. So long story short, he looks at my grades, and fortunately I worked really hard and I had really good grades and good test scores. And so he called me back the next day and he was so impressed with my transcript. And he said, Brian, if you work that hard in the classroom, I know you would on the football field, so we'll offer you a scholarship. And the plan worked, because a couple days later, BYU came calling too.
And the rest is history. So you ultimately decided to go on a mission. So you served a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And that was after 1 year, correct, at BYU?
Yeah, I'm jealous that the age now, you can go at 18.
How has your mission continued to bless you today?
I couldn't even articulate. So grateful for that time. I think about it all the time. I just, it's so nostalgic and it's just, you know, we're not supposed to be proud, but I'm proud of the service and the sacrifice. And it was tough. Leaving football, and I'm not going to throw a name under the bus, but there was a coach at BYU who asked me if I would stay another year. And, it was tempting because of who was on the schedule. We had just had the first losing season at BYU in 30 years. I would probably be a starter, but I had made that decision when I was five, just like I made the decision when I was five to play at BYU. And so that's what I was going to do. And I did it and loved every second of it. And it wasn't easy. It was hard. It was cold. I went to Toronto, Canada, and the people were not receptive. So that was tough. But man, I have the fondest memories, and I just encourage every young man and young woman to think about it and to do it.
So when you come back, this is the era of BYU football where it's you know, regime changes and things are starting to be different. Now Bronco Mendenhall is the head coach. How did things change when you got back?
Yeah, so Bronco arrived for the DC position a few months before I left, and I went through spring ball with him. And so I got exposed to him and loved him. And so when I saw he was hired, which was a few months before I got home, I was just thrilled. And I still remember my dad sent me the newspaper clipping of when they unveiled the new old uniforms, and it gave me chills. Whoever decided to go to those atrocious uniforms of the late 90s and early 2000s, oh, man, I don't know what you were thinking.
So you don't think that the bibs are going to come back as like a retro one game off thing?
Those are so horrible. Oh, man. But when I saw those, the old school, it gave me chills, and I was so excited.
How would you describe your career at BYU? You're one of the best linebackers to ever play football at BYU. And like I said, for those that have not seen Brian play, please go watch highlights. How do you look back on it? How do you describe it when people ask you about your career?
I love it. It was the time of my life. It was a dream come true. I'm always not satisfied, so I'm still bugged that I didn't start as a freshman, and I'm bugged that I didn't start as a sophomore, and I'm bugged that I didn't get more sacks when I did start. And so that's just who I am. I obviously had a great career, and I loved every second of it. But I look back and I think, oh, I should have done this, and I should have done that, and I could have done this, and I always want more.
So as we've talked and gone through your life, you've talked about, like, I made the decision I was going to do this, and then I made the decision I was going to do this, and all these things have happened. So, you know, you made the decision that you were going to play football, and you did, and you make the decision that you're going to go on a mission, and that you were going to play at BYU. And we had talked earlier that your goal was to play in the NFL. When that opportunity presented itself and you realized that you had reached that goal, what type of reaffirming moment was that for you, that all of the hard work that you had put in was now paying off?
Yeah, I mean, there's moments in your life when the hard work pays off that just transcends everything. And that was one of them. Getting to the top of the mountain, it is just so fulfilling. And I get why people do it. In our society today, there's a lack of people doing hard things. And hard things make great people. And so anyway, for your question, that day, I mean, I remember, I will never forget what it felt like getting that phone call and the affirmation and the validation and just the feeling rewarded for the hard work and the sacrifice and all the times where I was watching what I ate and going to bed early and waking up and instead of hanging out, I was running sprints and at the stadium, going up the stairs and timing myself to get to the Y, and I could go on and on. And I did that for years, and it paid off. And it was one of the most rewarding things that I've ever experienced.
Well, you're drafted by the Giants, and I believe they're coming off winning the Super Bowl the year before. So you're going into the NFL, and you're going to New York City. What was that whole situation like to deal with? Because I know it's such a whirlwind. You get drafted, and then they fly you out there, and you have press conferences, and you're immediately, you know, you've got mini camps and OTAs and all that stuff that you're getting ready for. What was that time of your life like?
Man, it was a whirlwind. I look back, and it's just like, wow. It's just a fire hose. It's just unleashed on you and trying to learn the defense. And at BYU, there were a lot of things that really prepared me for the NFL. One of them was not the complexity of our defense. We had just installed that 3-4 at BYU as the first 2 years of it, and it was vanilla. We had a basic, simple defense, and we executed it really well. So it helped us there, but the defense that the Giants had was so complex. And so that was tough. You adjust to that, the speed of the game, and then you're being a pro, and people, you know, wanting to be in your life, it's coming out of the woodworks. And then New York is there's no picnic. It was a whirlwind. And when I look back, I miss it like crazy. I would go through that whirlwind again in a second.
So a kid from Utah who plays college at BYU, you're now into the NFL. That's a whole different ball game in terms of outside things and outside influences. How did you, as a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or maybe not even just as a member of the church, but as a man of faith, how did you handle all of the trappings that are obviously out there when you reach a certain level like that?
Yeah, so it is not easy, but it goes back to, you kind of mentioned how I made decisions. And one of the decisions that I made, I decided that if I couldn't be who I am and play in the NFL, then I wouldn't play in the NFL. So I just kind of watched everything that I did and the people around me. And I kind of constructed a bubble, and it kind of, that hurt me in a way, because I think some of the coaches and teammates noticed that, especially when I was young. And I know there were some coaches of the Giants that didn't like that, but it did help me shield off the influences that I don't want in my life.
So you did not finish your career with the New York Giants. You had a couple of different spots. When you look back on your NFL career, what really stands out to you in terms of your journey in the NFL?
It's the same thing. I'm never satisfied. I'm still mad. Like I look back and I think I should have played for 15 years and been on 5 Pro Bowl teams and been a starter. And I will never not feel that way. And so I loved it. I loved every second of it and was grateful for the opportunity. 100% not satisfied. And that's part of why I miss it so much. And I would love to do it again.
So with all that being said, and we touched on this at the very beginning of the conversation, the alumni game in 2022 at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, how much fun was that to be back out in that environment and for you to play such an important role at the very end of the game?
Oh, dude, it's funny you mentioned that. Just this morning, I was thinking, oh, that's kind of time for them to start reaching out and you know, planning that. I wonder if that's happening again this year. Then they better call me.
And for those that don't know, Brian caught the Hail Mary catch that won the game. That's what happened.
That was, honestly, it's one of the highlights of my time at BYU. Like, it was so fun. And I've never scored a touchdown in that stadium. I obviously played on defense, so that's tough to do. But so that was fun. And it was just, oh, man. To compete and to be with the guys and to be on that field again. And it's just so many emotions, and it doesn't replicate the real thing, but it was the closest thing that I have had. And that's the thing with football. Like, you play football and when it's done, it's done. The Turkey Bowl on Thanksgiving morning, it's not an approximation of it. It's not close. You know, if you're a golfer, you can play competitive golf and there's leagues and it's the same game, you know, but football's not like that. And so when it's gone, it's gone. And that was the closest thing. And they better call me because I want to play again.
So we're going to get this. We're going to make sure that everybody over at the football offices are hearing this podcast, so they know that, that if the invite goes out, Brian's in for
sure.
Should
be the first call.
Yeah, he wants to be the first call. All right, Brian, last thing before we wrap things up, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time. It's so great to talk with you. I want to ask you, as we wrap this up, what, when you look back on your playing career and your life growing up, what lessons have you learned in your life that have made the most impressions on you as you've gotten older and now have your own family?
That's a good question. I let's go back to that effort that we talked about. And you know, we'll throw in a gospel principle here too. President Nelson recently said that the Lord loves effort. And I love that. I love that phrase and that idea and that concept. Obviously it's true, but I think a lot of times we forget about it, and life is tough. It's hard. We're not going to always succeed. We're going to fail. We're going to fall down. We're going to slip. We're going to mess up. We're going to skin our knee, but it's all about effort. It's all about what do we do after those disappointments and the difficulties and in the midst of the adversity that is our life. And so that's sports, that's school, that's family life, that's social life, that's the fabric of our society. So for me, I think the principle is you just, it's effort. It's keep going, keep working. And in the end, good things happen. They come and they're not always what you think or what you want, but good things that are meant to be, they turn out.
Well, Brian, beyond anything you did on the football field, I want to take this opportunity to tell you one of the things that I have admired about you most is you have always represented your family well. You have represented BYU well. And I think that says a lot about you and your character. And I've always been impressed by how you've handled yourself. And I can't say thanks enough for being willing to do this today.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks once again to my guest, Brian Keel. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.